Hey everyone, welcome back to the Making Mammoth Podcast. Today we have a super special guest. We're sitting down with Jesse David Green, and Jesse has a special history with Mammoth because Jesse started Mammoth Booth way back in the day. And so we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, love it.
And so Mammoth Booth is a photo booth company that Jesse started. When was it? How long ago was it?
That would have been 2012, wow. I think was when that was. Yeah, because it was 5 years before the transition happened. But yeah, 2012.
Nice. And then we passed the torch over to myself and, and our team.
Let you run with it.
In what year?
2017.
Yeah, 2017. Wow. And it's been a wild time since then. But it's super exciting because you saw something in the photo booth industry that not many other people saw at the time, which was, hey, you being a photographer, you're like, I pride myself.
Value add.
Yeah.
And it was, the interesting thing was, is I had bought, there is a company called Smile Booth, which I'm sure you know of, that was kind of like the king of the photo booth, of the non-cheesy new photo booth. And I had seen them at a photo conference or something and just loved what they were doing. And there was like this split period of time where they were like, hey, we're not just going to run our own company. We're going to sell off this equipment and let other people run their own company with Smile Booths. And it was literally like a 3 month window. And then they were like, no, we're not going to do that. We're like creating our own competition all over the country. But I got in that time and like spent like $10,000 or something on one of their pieces of equipment, which was highly overpriced, but like it was all proprietary, like custom. And so I grabbed their thing, but it ended up being like a terrible experience from the equipment perspective. Like they had nothing in place to like support it or warranty it, or like, if something went down during an event, they had nobody there to like answer your questions. Then later switched to the, Photo Booth Supply Company or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Switched to a different, equipment thing. But Mammoth Booth was kind of born out of another company called Mammoth Reach that I had started with a partner that was a design firm. Just saw the opportunity of really like thinking of it just as an investment, and the fact that I was already at like 35, 40 weddings a year anyway. So figured could double down a little bit. It ended up being that ended up being the more successful of those two ventures.
Mammoth Booth was more successful than Mammoth Reach.
More like commercially applicable, like Mammoth Reach was a long story, but like could never get it to a viable point that could scale it beyond the two of us. We were always just kind of like butting heads against the hump of like needing more help to produce more work. But
that's a tricky place to be.
Yeah. So Mammoth Booth had like a lot easier of a, you could work with contractors to go out and run the events, or I was already at a wedding or whatever. And it was just like a more fun, like, brand to play around with.
It is super fun. It's one of the things that I loved about Mammoth Booth is like your website, your branding, the personality behind it was really showed true that it was you and your team behind it. And like, you get awesome photos from the photo booths, but it's not that great of an experience if your guests aren't having a super fun time.
Right.
And that's like where Doug and who else was part of the Mammoth Booth team back in the day?
Oh man, we had, Doug was at like the vast majority of the events, I feel like. We had a few other, another girl named Haley, and then our buddy Seth Brown was helping for a while on the like sales side of things. But I feel like for the most part, it was Doug and then like me sometimes if I wasn't at my own event. But it was a blast. Like it feels like a completely different, lifetime ago. And we had kind of, when we started it, in Detroit and Chicago as like two separate markets, but with one piece of equipment. So for like 2 years, it was like, I was in Chicago once or twice a month, just like hoofing back and forth. Like not at all a profitable like business move, but we got like free trips to Chicago out of it. That's just what we counted it as.
It's nice to break even for a time, but eventually you're like,
Chicago's not cool enough for me to just keep driving back and forth.
What made you want to start going to Chicago? Were you just doing weddings there?
I had a few weddings there, and then I had family there in the suburbs that like I just liked it. Callie, my wife, and I at the time like thought that maybe we might want to move there someday. So it was just fun to like, go and stay in a nice hotel and just write it off and not actually make any money from it. But it was that quickly waned that was not the best not the best business move.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Keep it local.
I remember we got to go to Chicago one time for after we took over Mammoth Booth, and it was a fun trip.
Yeah,
and like made like maybe a couple bucks, but it was just a fun experience, and it's cool to travel and meet new people and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So who's this?
That's Winston. He's the studio dog. He gets very depressed if he doesn't come with me, and just bothers my wife at home all day. So, like, he legitimately in the morning when I'm getting ready will stay at like my thigh until we're out the door, because he like is wanting to be like, hey, we're still going, right? Like,
yeah,
we're still,
like, you're taking me.
We're still
with
going
you,
to work, right,
Dad?
And it's like, if I don't take him, he will literally mope and stare out the window for like 8 hours.
Oh, goodness.
And like not eat. Like he'll go on like a hunger strike, and like it's so dramatic. And like my wife will just be like blowing up my phone of like, can you please just come get this dog? Like,
that's great. Aww. It's nice to have such a loyal dog.
Yeah. He's calmed down a lot since he's been like coming every day too. He just like,
he gets used to
he's
it.
He's down to chill now.
Now, from a photographer's standpoint, too, you went from doing a lot of weddings, and now do you still do weddings, or what do you focus on now?
Yeah, I shot weddings for 12 years. I started when I was 16 and was full-time in that starting at age 17. So that was like all I ever did for, I haven't worked for somebody else since I was 17. I was like only shooting weddings. And so for the first, you know, 7-8 years, it was all just like weddings, portraits, that's it. And then for the past 5 years or so, I've been kind of like scaling out of weddings somewhat, like lopping like 5 off a year of the, you know, total count, moving into more commercial work. And then when Handcar kind of came around, I will be after this year, I'll be out of weddings completely, other than like occasional family or friends or people that can convince me to come out of retirement.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite thing about shooting weddings?
I really like, I honestly like, it's a grind of like, I really don't like the back end work of it, like the editing side of it, and like, you know, slogging through thousands of photos to find the ones. And it's gotten harder and harder now that I'm running the agency for like the few weddings that I had as stragglers like last year. And then I'm going to have, you know, 7 or 8 to finish up this year. It gets harder to find the time to edit because I'm not like in editing mode anymore. I'm in like running this company mode. So it's like, that's all happening at like, you know, 4 a.m. of just like staying up and like
just calling,
grinding our way through it.
And you're a dad too.
Yeah. Yeah. Of 3.
Oh my goodness.
But I honestly, like, as much as that's a grind, like I honestly truly do love like being on site at weddings. Like it's still a fun, it's just a fun experience. And it's a fun, like I've had a blast, like attempting to be the like lowest stress person that they hire. Like it's nice to be like the one person that people are like, oh my gosh, like thank you for being like the easiest part of this this process. And like, yeah. So those relationships are amazing. And like working with people on, you know, what is supposedly the happiest day of their life up until that point is a really fun thing. And I've gotten to travel a lot for it too, which is great. I was supposed to have my first international wedding in 2020, and here we are.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, after like 11 years of grinding it out, I finally thought I was going to Italy to shoot a wedding.
Aww. And
it's still on the books for this year, but I'm not entirely optimistic about my chances.
Well, I hope you get to make it over.
Thank
here.
You. Yeah, me appreciate too. That.
That'll be so pretty.
We can manifest that today on this podcast.
It's your retirement gift.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So you're moving out of weddings and more into like corporate and agency work. Yep. What's that like? What's your favorite thing about getting into that kind of grind?
It's been a wild ride. It's been a lot of learning curves, just mostly from the, you know, like team standpoint. Like I said, it was 12 years of me by myself in a room editing photos or working with people on site or whatever, you know, occasional contractors working with me. Had the four or five year span of Mammoth Reach, Mammoth Booth that had a couple people on a team. But like, this is the first time that like, you know, I've really grown it to like an actual thing with people. So that part of it has been, you know, a learning curve, and just running a business with multiple people involved, and it's been crazy, but like a lot of fun and super fulfilling to like have, you know, a team of people around you and not have everything just exclusively on your shoulders at all times.
Yeah.
So it's been a really fun transition, and like I'm still shooting a little bit, but we have a photographer on our team here too that, you know, is shooting a lot of product photos for us. So, which is not like, has been great actually. Like it's not bothering me that I don't have a camera in my hand as much anymore. I've kind of just like naturally fallen into this new role that I'm liking a lot. So it's been cool. It's been like a really fun transition where like, Handcar is like a, you know, social media agency at its core, but with all of the content creation managed in-house. So our you know, main plan is supporting social, whether we're running it or not. But from a content perspective, we're putting out photo, video design, and then just like overall strategy for a lot of our clients too. So it's been a fun journey.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So now let's rewind back to the beginning of that journey.
Yeah.
Because from what I know is you've done Mammoth Reach, you've done Mammoth Booth. You had your Airbnbs, interior design.
Yeah.
You do a lot of different things, and that's really awesome.
Yeah. Bill's constantly like, oh, Jesse David Green does that. Oh, Jesse David Green did this thing. Oh, yeah, Jesse did that. And I'm like, really cool. I can't wait to meet him.
Jack of all trades, master of none, I think is the.
Some of us are in that boat, but it's just that entrepreneurial spirit and seeing something.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just seeing something that you're interested in. You're like, I can do that. I'm curious about that. Yeah. We can figure it out. And so it sounds like a lot of where you are now with Handcar is the sum of your entire life leading up to it.
Yeah. In a lot of ways it is. And it's been an interesting thing too. Like I've had this conversation with people here a couple times too, of like, you know, I managed to have a great, like, wedding photography was great to me. Like, you know, made good money, had a fulfilling job that was super flexible, and I could go anywhere I wanted with my family at any given time, and like had a lot of just really awesome things. But like the funny part of it is like, and it's become even more apparent like since I've been here and been doing something different, like the funny part of it is like I'm truly not that creative of a person. Like I managed to have a great career in a creative field for more than a decade. But I've quickly found that like I'm an implementation person. Like I'm not a big ideas guy. I don't have like ideas don't just like pop into my head and like, but give me something and like I'll figure out the team to make it happen or steps that need to take to get there or whatever. So that's been something that, but yeah, to your point, like this is a culmination of a lot of those things. Cause you know, dabbled in the design agency for 4 years, dabbled in commercial photography for the last five, had the, you know, ran social media for a couple different clients, like underneath my photography brand for a few years. So like this, it really, I haven't thought of it that way, but it really is like a bit of a culmination of those things. And then, we run her interior design company together kind of as a smaller, you know, subset in between raising three kids. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun to like tie all those pieces together in a cohesive way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you bring up a great point. Like, I think at the end of the day, getting anything done successfully is having the right people.
Oh, yeah.
It's just knowing and having the right people accessible and having the right conversations to make the things happen.
Yeah, it's very true. And like, I have been so lucky to be surrounded by such awesome people here so early on, and especially as we've like scaled so quickly. Like Doug and I were here from the beginning in December of 2019 when we kind of kicked this off. Hannah came on kind of like halfway through last year, and then Stephanie came on towards the end of the year. And then we've got, you know, a few like contractors and partners that help us out with stuff. But it's just been a really cool trajectory, and like in a way that, like, you know, I was expecting it to just be Doug and I for a while. Just thought we'd be just him and I grinding it out in a room for a couple years, but it's been cool that like we've been able to scale it up and find other ways to bring other people into the fold, and you know, have the ups and downs of learning how to hire and how to, you know, where you messed up in the hiring process. And it's been just like education day after education day has been the way it's gone, you know.
When did you and Doug start working together and you realized like you two were going to take on this big project? Business.
Yeah, like him and I have known each other for probably almost a decade at this point. And he like was a subcontractor for me for forever, both like for Mammoth Booth to start, and then he started shooting, like, I would sell him as a wedding videographer, like, underneath my brand. So, like, he would just, like, show up and shoot and do it. And the clients wouldn't have to, like, deal with, you know, another vendor or whatever. And we just always had a blast, like, became really good friends in the process and, always, you know, wanted to find ways to work together. But, like, when you're just running a wedding photography company or whatever, there's never, like, you know, enough meat on the bone to have another full-time person or whatever. So he was working in-house somewhere else in video production and animation. And yeah, the way that like Handcar kind of came to be was I was running social media for Detroit Foundation Hotel down here for about 3 years, like underneath my wedding photography like brand. It would just was like a one-off project that kind of came to be. I was shooting all their content and then running all their social. But I had worked in the previous few years, I had worked for both Chaco Footwear and Cat Footwear, which are like under the like Wolverine umbrella of brands on the west side of the state. So I'd gotten to know them, had become really good friends with their creative director who had moved from one brand to the other. And she called me like 2 weeks prior to Christmas in December of 2019. And she was like, you know, hey, we just like, we fired our social media guy. Like, you know, we're scrambling. It's like the holiday season. We're trying to like sell some shoes, you know? And so she was like, you obviously like know what you're doing in some capacity for a, you know, running social media for somebody. And so she was like, can you just do this for like 3 months? Like string us along through the holidays, help us, like let us go through the process of finding somebody new. And then like, you can pass off the project and be on your way. I was like, yeah, that like, that sounds like a lot of fun, but like I have a full-time job and that is a full-time job. So, the cool thing of it was, and like, it was so awesome that like Doug was willing to dive in with me on it was like, I obviously like, that was an unexpected project. It wasn't something I saw coming. So like, I didn't need the money of like what it was going to be. So like, I didn't have to count on that. So I was like, all right, well, this like, this might be our chance. It's like, we've got, if it's a 3 month project, but it's like 6 months of runway, like money wise to like bring Doug in, I'm like, quit your job and let's like do this thing. And we've got 3 months to figure it out. And yeah. Like, and then we've got three more months to pay you while we like find other clients or whatever. And to his credit, he believed that statement when I said it and here we are, but,
and you ended up hiring another team member within that 6 months.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so what happened was, is 2 weeks into that project, two or three weeks into that project, they basically came to us and they were like, you guys are crushing it. Like, we're not even going to go to the drawing board of like finding somebody. Like, we just want you guys to be our guys. Like, we're extending your contract through the end of 2020 at least, and then kind of take it from there. So the cool thing was, and, you know, we had some ups and downs in there, and, they just, Chaco has been such an amazing client, has given us just so much trust into what we do. And what ended up happening with the pandemic is like, they went through this period where they like furloughed 70% of their team or something like that. Their marketing team went from like 12 people down to two.
Wow.
And somehow we survived that without getting the axe. But what happened was, is like, we actually got busier during that time because they just had to rely on us so much heavier. So they, because their team was now, you know, a skeleton of what it was. So they started coming to us for, we became their graphic designers. We became like strategists or like brainstorming with them on projects. And, they just like invited us more and more into the fold, and we had to get more and more nimble with how shoots happened. And like, you know, they launched a new slide for kids, and they're like, you know, it's like deep quarantine at that point. And they're like, well, we need an ad somehow. So it's like Doug and I filmed it in my backyard with my own kids. And like, so we got to show them like how nimble we could be and how like quickly we could pivot. And like to, you know, to the point of, they were also like our only client at that time. So we were investing literally all of our time into this, but, it was an awesome experiment to get to just like dive in on that. And, they had like a bunch of, they're supposed to have these like huge experiential tours that were going to like travel the country last summer. And obviously all those got canceled. So we got to work with, our friend and creative director there, Jamie, to like rework how all of that could work and make that a digital experience instead. So like, in a matter of like a week or two following like the original like lockdown, we had reformatted all of the programming that was supposed to happen nationwide. And like, we had invited in a bunch of people to do like, you know, 15-minute yoga break in the middle of the day on Instagram Live or whatever. And like, you know, we had like theme music and graphics, and like we had pivoted this whole thing, and it was like one of the coolest things that we've gotten to do. And you know, from like a metrics standpoint, if you look back at like the stats of what that did, it wasn't like all that impressive. It didn't, you know, you're putting out like a 15-minute like breathing session at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday, and you get like 15 viewers on a on a page that has like 375,000 followers. You're feeling a little bit discouraged, but like at the end of it, what it did was like it made a continuation of the brand. It kept the conversation alive even in the midst of like uncertain and weird times, and it just gave somebody something to talk about. And so that was a real like shining moment in the year. And like, they've remained amazing partners to this day and keep just giving us awesome ways to stretch our brains and our, you know, our processes. And, they've just been a really, really cool client to work with.
Yeah. Sounds like an amazing client to work with. And you just went in so deep with your relationship, and you're like, hey, we're going to give you our all. And it worked out.
Yeah. It's very much been I think they've just found that like, if they give something to us, whether it's half baked or not, that we'll just kind of figure it out. That's kind of what we've become. Yeah. They can like give us half a brief that they like had to, you know, quit typing halfway through, and they're like, can you just please? And like, we're like, yeah, we'll get there.
They trust you to own it. And that's
awesome. They're like, you know, the brand, you know, the voice, just like, please just go
but
figure it out.
That's like the value of having less clients, but being able to do more with them. So it's so much better than like having, you know, being a contractor for someone. Instead, you're truly a partner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we are for them specifically. It's kind of like we're just a de facto part of their, you know, marketing team. Like we're in on a lot of the meetings that their in-house team is on. And it's just like we're kind of just part of the crew. But it's to that point, it's like it's provided this really amazing thing. And like they're pretty much on board with any idea we bring to them, too, which is cool. That's kind of the beauty of this, like, cohesive approach that we take to social, where we're touching content, we're touching like the engagement and the scheduling and all of that stuff, because we have our hand on everything. It's like we're able to bring these ideas to them where we're like, hey, this person's been in our DMs every day and they're, you know, talking about this or telling us this story. Like, do we have your blessing to like go tell this story and like go out and do it? And they're like, yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
That's so cool.
So it's been really cool partnerships, and we've gotten to do some really awesome things with them specifically.
Yeah. And you just said something that I want to talk a little bit more about. You said we get to put our hands in, and your name is Handcar, and something we constantly get asked is why Mammoth? And so I want to ask you, like, how did you come up with Mammoth? How did you come up with Handcar?
So Mammoth was completely nothing. Like, it was literally just Nick, who was my partner, and I, we were literally just sitting there and we were just like, the name should just be like a nothing name. Like, doesn't mean anything, doesn't have anything to do with what we're doing. It's just like, it's a name that's fun. And so initially the name was actually Mammoth Peach, because it was literally just two words that meant nothing combined together, whatever. And then we were like, oh, we should probably have like some kind of, you know, marketing something in there. So it turned to Mammoth Reach, all one word. And then Mammoth Booth was obviously just like a cultivation of like a sub brand of that. But the hand car Doug actually came up with, and now has nabbed the vanity license plate for it.
I saw that when we pulled up. I was like, that has to be Doug.
I'm a little upset about it. Like, I'm a little upset that I didn't get it, but to his credit, he thought of it first and I didn't. So I got to give it to him. But and he came up with the name.
You can be Handcar too.
Yeah. Well, the problem is Handcar is seven characters. Like, exactly, so I'm already out. I can't add a number to it.
Oh, you can make the A a four.
Ooh, that could work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll think about it. I just dealt with going to Secretary of State. I'm not going back again.
That's fair.
the way that came to be was we had gone through a bunch of names. So the funny thing was, is like when we started in December of 2019, we were still kind of just like operating underneath my like photography brand. Like, we didn't have a website for this. We didn't really know it was going to go anywhere. So we were just kind of like filtering it under what I was doing. But the problem was, is like, as we went along and we created more work, there wasn't really like a good avenue to share it. So it was like, we were like, okay, we probably need to like, you know, sub brand this into something else. So we came up with a few names, again, kind of just trying to think of the, like, the random name route, or like we looked at like the historical context of like the neighborhood we're in to see if there was any like notable historical people from here that we could use their last name or, you know, something like that. And the one, like the forefront name that was, we were kind of thinking of going with for a little while was Foss, F-O-S-S, which Doug had also found, which was like a famous like steamship or something that, you know, traveled and did like river line, like, tugboat stuff or whatever. But it's, it used a Detroit diesel engine in it, was like the tie here. So it's like, again, super random name, but short, sweet, looked cool. But then like, as we dove in, there was like a bunch of other companies that were also using some variation of that. So where Handcar happened is the building that we're sitting in, which is our studio, was built in like 1935, and it lived its entire life up until like 3 years ago as a hand car wash garage. So two bays here, cars would pull right in, they would wash your car, then you'd be on your way. So like year round, you could just pull your car in. This was a car wash garage.
That is so cool.
And if you look on like, if you look on Google Maps and stuff, like you can, when you do like the archive thing to see all the times they drove by, there's like, we have historical photos of like four or five different variations of car wash that this was.
Of what, like, it looked like.
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool.
Like just different, like terrible paint slapped on the outside. At one point it was like a car wash ministry of a church. So it was like, it was literally called like Healing Hands Car Wash or something.
Should print these.
Just thinking about that.
We have like I have like a whole Dropbox folder of like the archival images we found of it. So yeah, Doug was like, well, we should, like, the cool thing was, is like, we could lean into that. Again, it's still like a simple, you know, one word thing, but it has some context to what we're doing. And cause even when this building was a yoga studio just prior to us, and like, they had never painted the outside. So like when I bought the building, it still had like the car wash prices, like hand painted on the side of it and stuff. And so that was kind of where we got the context from, but it, you know, it worked out because it was still like a simple name that was not in use pretty much anywhere. We're still trying to nab the .com domain name and the Instagram handle, but there's a car wash supply company in, like, is it Spain? In Spain, that goes by Handcar, and they won't give it up. I'm a little upset about it, but
maybe one day.
We're trying to see if we can just like hire somebody to hack them and just take it down.
Oh my goodness.
That's a good creative way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're trying to use our creative juices.
I never even knew how much that stuff mattered until I met Bill. Like, that's the kind of thing I wouldn't even think about.
I know, and you can't sleep at night.
Yeah, they have your .com.
Well, we just hired someone. She goes, I couldn't find your website. What's your website? And I'm like, oh, that's coming from you.
I don't want to talk about
you.
It.
Like,
yeah.
That's not like,
come on, Disney, sell me mammoth.com.
We thought we almost had the .com like a month ago. It was like the domain websites were showing it as like the brokered sale or whatever. And so like, it was like, it had dropped to like $1,500 or something. And at that point I'm like, whatever, like, let's get this done. So I did it, and it, like, the payment went through, everything was good. And then they were like, oh, sorry, our information was outdated. We don't know like how to find the owner, and it's like, it's not for sale. So we're back to square one.
Oh, that's
we have .co at least. Well, I feel like that's like enough people.
It's close.
Know how to use that at this point.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Well, I hope you get that along with your Italy retirement trip.
Thank you so much.
We're .us.
It's all right.
Yeah. Making it work. I was just talking with, I'm like, mammothstudio.com was like $1,200. Like, might cop that one.
Yeah, there comes a point where you're tired of fighting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bill, I want to talk with you a little bit now about when you bought Mammoth Booth, what made you kind of decide you want to stick with Mammoth, but you want to be Mammoth Party?
Yeah, so we bought Mammoth Booth, and I had another photo booth company before that called Booth Booth. And Jesse, you messaged me. You're like, hey, I'm thinking about maybe getting out of the business, and like curious if we could work something out.
And we had like collaborated. Yeah. Like I mean, we had shared, you know, notes from both running photo booth companies. We had talked quite a bit.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And like I would like rent his extra equipment every once in a while if we got in a pinch where we had like double booked events or whatever. But like, interestingly enough, like we didn't really have a whole lot of crossover in our markets that we were serving. Like Bill was kind of more towards the west side. I was mostly in like Detroit, Ann Arbor, you know, area. So we weren't really like competitors as much. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. and it's nice to be able to have people who you can do that
with.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, a lot of people who you do that with too, like Scott.
Yeah. Like pre 2020, there was plenty of events to go around. And so it was always nice to be able to help everybody.
Yeah, everyone is so supportive. Like I never realized how supportive everyone is in like the creative industry.
Yeah. There's enough to go around. We all did just fine. But yeah, I feel like we had started the conversation like a year prior to that.
Yeah,
where
we did.
I was just kind of, with all the other stuff I had going on and shooting weddings, I was kind of just getting burned out of running it. And I had kind of just come to him and I was like, hey, would you ever like, you know, be interested in like absorbing this into what you're doing? And, you know, we've got a pretty good lock on the Detroit market, so maybe it makes sense. And like, it just didn't, we couldn't come to terms on like something that made sense or whatever. But then, yeah, it was like a year later, it was kind of in a time of peril that I had to let it go. But it kind of all worked out. It was like, I feel like it was like November or December. So it was like in our less busy time. We had an attendant that was out running an event. And the game plan was like event ended. She was going to bring it home. She had like my garage code and she was just going to like slide into my garage and leave at like, you know, 11 o'clock at night. And she decided to just real quick stop off at a friend's party on the way to my house. She did all the right things. She parked her car under a street light. It was all, everything was covered underneath like a blanket, all of that stuff. And in the like 30 minutes that she was inside this party, somebody bashed in her window and ganked all of my equipment.
Wow.
You know, full photo booth kit. They had left, you know, like the backdrop, but like anything of value. We had like a second Pelican case with like gear in it and supplies and just all gone, you know, $8,000-$9,000 worth of equipment, something like that. And
her car.
Yeah. Her car remained. It was just the window got bashed in. So the car did not get stolen. But so the funny thing was like, you know, I had already been kind of burned out like a year earlier. I was kind of like okay with moving on. So it was like the funny thing is I didn't find out about it till the next morning. She didn't call me until the next day. And like I just woke up thinking that the stuff was in my garage and it wasn't. So she called me and she's like, hey, like I'm at the police station. I'm like filing a police report. Like all this stuff got stolen last night. And like I had insurance on all of it. So like I really wasn't like freaking out that much. I think I would have been if it was like earlier in the summer when like, you know, we're doing back-to-back-to-back events and I don't have anything to run them with anymore. But so there's like a few days where I was like, it's no big deal. Like we'll get the insurance money. We'll buy another one. You know, that company that we bought the equipment from, like it's easy. It's not like it was like a one-off proprietary thing. Like that first booth we had. I was like, cool, we'll figure it out. And like, as I got to thinking, I was like, maybe this is just my, like, maybe this is my exit. This might be the way out. So yeah, I basically like, I ended up just being like, and we only had like one or two events left on the calendar for the year. And so I was like, I kind of just took the insurance money and then was just like, maybe this is, you know, this is the end. But the beauty of it was, and like, I got to go to Bill at the end of it and just be like, hey, like, do you just want to take like, you know, our remaining clients that we have for the last couple for this year and the few that we already have booked for next year and like the brand, like, would you be interested in just taking, you know, the intellectual property, like assets of what we did. And he agreed and we ended up there and it was like, it was the coolest possible scenario. Cause like I could have just, had he not done that, I would have just shut it down and like, it would have ceased to exist. And like, but like that was a bummer to think about given like how much, like we had a super strong brand in place. We had really cool design elements and pamphlets and like, you know, our website was super cool. And it was like, that was just a bummer to like, it would have been whatever, but it was a bummer to like think about that just ceasing to exist entirely.
Yeah.
So yeah, it all kind of worked out and Bill carried on the torch from there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. I remember when I think you just called me and you're like, hey, here's what happened. Like, gonna shut it down or
you wanna buy my stuff.
Or just like wanna buy some like extra backdrops and just kind of carry the torch, and we were able to work it out. And so yeah, I'm just like, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful that you didn't have to go through that heartbreak of shutting it down and you could see it kind of live on. I get attached to like different businesses that I start, and yeah. I'm sure you do as well. You're like, this is part of me. Put a lot of sweat into it, a lot of stress into it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great times in it as well. And you want to see it live on. So.
Yeah. Like there was no way that when March 2020 came along, you were feeling good.
I was in March 2020. I was like, well, this sucks, but can't do anything about it. So
yeah, it's that was a wild go, you know. I mean, it was crazy in different ways for a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, like our Airbnb stuff, like we had, my wife's an interior designer. We had started, you know, all of these we had started, I think 8 different Airbnbs over the last, from 2015 to 2020. And when March of 2020 hit, we were running 4 still at that point. So we had a house in Traverse City, and then we had 3 different like loft apartments here in Detroit. And one of which was like a partnership with the developer. So that wasn't really like our asset. We were just kind of like managing it for him. But lockdown hit, you know, you're in the hospitality industry at that point, and we lost like $36,000 of projected, you know, revenue in like a 24-hour period. Not like money we had to refund, but money that was, you know, supposed to be coming down the pipeline for that. And like you just sat there and like, you know, obviously nobody knew the extent of what it was at that time, but you sat there and like projected it out, and you're like, if the world is shutting down this much right now, like, is there ever going to be a point in this year that like I'm going to clear the hump of what these cost to run? And like the more I projected, I was like, there's no way. Like there's no, like we already, our places in Detroit, a lot of times in the winter we didn't even get over the hump of what they cost to run. We would make up for it in the summer by like having great months and, you know, killing it in the warmer like tourism months. But like we were already writing checks in the winter, and we had just come off the tail end of the winter. And I was like, it's just not going to happen. And so same thing, like had to pivot, had to find a way out of it. Our house in Traverse, we were already selling like separately of outside of COVID anyway. So that one was kind of fine. We got out of the partnership with the other guy. That was fine. But then we had two like what were very successful Airbnbs left, that were just, you know, sitting empty with no reason for them to change. So yeah, had to find, luckily those were both, we didn't own either of those. We were leasing them and then re-leasing them. So we got to just find new tenants for them and sell all our furniture and walk away. I'm sure, you know, you with all the photo booth stuff and, being in like event service-based industries at that point in time I am a very like anxiety-free person for the most of the time. Like I'm pretty chill. Not much bothers me, but like that was the most like nervous I've ever gotten for like finances and business and like having a family and like my wife was pregnant and like all That's of that lot, stuff. Like that was the most like scared I've ever been, was like those first 2 weeks of just like watching and like, you know, not at that point too, like I'm not only responsible for myself, but like Doug was there at that time. So like I'm responsible for someone else and their family and like their livelihood and that. So that was like a whole new, you know, ball game and part of it. And we had just like, Doug and I had just like, we're like putting together a contract with Toyota to shoot all of their auto shows all over the country. And it's like
so many opportunities,
like all that stuff where you're just like, that would have been like, we had done like 3 or 4 of them by that point, and like we were like, this is cool, it's pretty easy, like we get to travel to new places and be a part of these auto shows, and like it's not that hard, you just like wake up at 5 in the morning and like shoot an empty auto show and then like hang out for the rest of the day. And then yeah, that all went down the drain. But
it's a tough place to be, and a ton of people had to experience that, and I'm glad that you were able to figure your way out of it.
Yeah
No choice but to,
but yeah, exactly.
That's kind of what you say, is like, because you went right from being, you know, Mammoth Party to then focusing on software stuff, and then you're like, okay, we're gonna start focusing on video.
Yeah, you know, no choice but forward. And I think that's just kind of the way, it's what I default to. It's like, no matter how much it sucks right now, it's going to suck even more if you stop.
If I just sit here.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing's going
to
get better.
It's only going to get worse. So what, like how many like, what were you focusing on at that time?
With Photobooth?
Photobooth stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I was all in on Photobooth. So we turned Mammoth Booth into Mammoth. And then now Mammoth is Mammoth Party for our Photobooth branch. And then we have Mammoth Studio for all of our video stuff. Right. And then I have Flash as well, which I learned about from buying Mammoth Booth. Oh, yeah. I forgot
that you like acquired that software.
I did, yeah.
Right? Okay.
And so I'm like, this is awesome. I was using this old crappy Photobooth software before. And Jesse, you're like, yeah, we use this software called Flash. It's like, it makes my life super easy. I'm like, my life needs to be easier right now.
Yeah.
So I ended up like just emailing the owner / developer, James, and he entertained my offer, and we talked about it for a little bit, and then we just made a deal and made it happen. So like both of my businesses are events businesses. Uh-huh. And that was like, well, damn.
Yeah, like what was 2020 supposed to look like, Bill?
Yeah, 2020 was, you know, going to be best year ever.
It's going to be fantastic.
You were traveling.
Yeah, we were getting to like fly all over the United States doing different events. We had like Owens Corning and Red Bull and a handful of other like big name companies.
Sounds great.
It was awesome. And it was like doing events that we thoroughly had fun doing.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah, you just hired like, Lainey on yeah. and you had Lainey
you were starting
for a while.
To do things that were like bigger than yourself.
Exactly.
Like bigger than weddings and like feeling like you were a part of something and like, you know. That's
it was crazy. We were in Marco Island and then Orlando for two different events in March at the beginning of the pandemic. And so it was just announced early March. Thankfully,
I was in Florida right then too.
Yeah. It's like, hey, like this is
just
awesome.
Just blissfully unaware.
Yeah. And then
enjoying some sun.
Yeah. It was so good. And we did our first event with Owens Corning. It was like, hey, like maybe we'll like bump elbows with people. Cause like, it's like, oh, don't touch each other.
Right.
So that way they could still do the event. But our second event in Orlando, Orlando was a ghost town. It was nuts because this is when they had now closed stuff down, and we were in the middle of this event.
Just stuck there.
In this enormous hotel. There was like some conference that was supposed to have 4,000 doctors there, canceled it. So there was like maybe 100 people in this huge hotel, go to downtown Orlando, just deserted. And it was just
wild.
I remember that feeling. I'm like, oh my goodness, like this is really happening. This is so crazy. But we had to just figure it out. And I think like right away, we had just started like doing videos, and I knew I didn't want to just do normal videos. I knew I didn't want to do just traditional brand story videos. Like,
right.
Yes, those things are fun and enjoyable, but I really love the conversation behind it. And so knowing that podcast was growing and knowing that, well, we still have a team of people. I know I have my full ability that I can train everybody and we can do this video stuff because I'd done it before, not to the scale that we're doing it right now, but I reinvested everything into it. And here we are now making cool podcasts with people and can have conversations with you and lots of other awesome people. So make it work.
So what like the, so are you guys like, you know, if you have a client that you're producing a podcast, like you have your own podcast, obviously that we're on right now, but like for the client side of it, like, are you guys handling everything from production, like to deployment? Basically like somebody can just come to you with a concept of like, I want a podcast. I don't want to invest in all of the stuff that it takes to get there.
Yeah.
And you guys are just like managing that process.
Yeah. We'll own it all. Our goal is to always make it easy for people. A lot of our clients, they're busy and they don't have the energy or the time to figure out all of this stuff. And so they want to trust us with figuring out, well, what should we talk about? Who should our guests be? Where are we filming? What are the logistics behind it?
Right.
Brianna owns a lot of those conversations. And then we just hired a new team member, Bianca, and she's joining as a video producer in that capacity as well.
But I think the biggest thing is like we make social clips. So it's like a 45-minute episode chopped into like 20 to 30 different 30-second to 1-minute clips.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's for social media
and
marketing.
That's the stuff that actually like takes off and gets, you know, shared. The funny thing was is Stephanie and I were just meeting this morning and talking about, you know, that this was happening today and all of that stuff. And she was talking about the agency that she came from. There was, you know, this guy that ran this big business and he was filming video podcasts with another company, but like he was going to their agency just to chop it up. Like was paying them this exorbitant retainer just for them to take it and chop it up into these clips and that then get, you know, disseminated through the rest of their channels.
Yeah, because that's what
works. And I guess I just never really like realized, you know, the value that is there for that.
Yeah. We look at it as like, well, it's awesome that we're having a 45 minute to 90 minute long conversations with people.
Not everybody's.
But I know full well that nobody's going to listen to that. Yeah. Most people don't have time for that.
Yeah.
You have to earn the right to get somebody's attention for that long. So that's where we see, all right, well, we know that we could take a 3 minute clip or a 30 second clip and we can get people to watch that.
Yeah.
And then
if they care enough, take it to the next step and dive in.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny. Like I've noticed it even in the last couple of days. I think I'm in like the explore page on my Instagram, like a lot for some reason. I'm just like always, you know, diving in there. I watched like one clip from a podcast. Had never really done that like in that capacity before. And now like my explore page is just filled with like, you know, there's like a Dave Ramsey one popped in there. There's a Joe Rogan one popped in, and it's all just like, it's stuff popped in there.
And
that
that's
are,
Instagram. Yeah. Like where you so wouldn't like, put a podcast.
Yeah. So like now I literally had not thought twice about the like value of that. And like, you guys are literally living off of that concept. So.
Well, it's a great way to also give people a chance to get to know, like, and trust you. So I think a lot of people are becoming like the face of their brands and the face of their business.
Right.
And photos do a really good job at that. And then you need some good copywriting, you know, underneath the photos.
Right.
But another way to do it too is just conversations with people. Like you're kind of, especially in a video podcast, you're stuck being your real self.
Yeah.
And that shows.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can hide behind. Well, and it's cool too. Like that was the other kind of point we were talking about is like the value of it is you can like, even if you're, you know, in a position like you guys or in a position like us, like you can have conversations with people that you're not even necessarily working with. It's just brands that you like or
exactly.
that you aspire to. And you can just have those conversations, even if there's no expectation of a client agency relationship or whatever. It's just like, I just want to talk to you about what you did.
Yeah.
And I've always loved like those. I'm just obsessed with like business stories and people. And that was how I even got into commercial photo work in the first place was like, I had only been shooting weddings and portraits up until this point. It was like probably 2015, 2016. And I got approached by, there was a men's clothing company called Frank and Oak that was based out of like Montreal. And they wanted to produce this was like early days of like magazines coming back in like Kinfolk and like, you know, that kind of magazine. So they wanted to produce like an in-house magazine that was sold at their stores that just like sold on the lifestyle of their clothing brand. And this was like, it might've been even earlier. It might've been like 2013, 2014. So it was like early, like Detroit starting to be interesting days, you know, to people outside of here. And so they had come to a friend of mine to be the freelance like writer for an article like expose on Detroit and what was happening here. And she came to me and hired me to be the photographer on it. But the concept of it was like, go to 5 different business owners, makers, doers, and just like profile them essentially. So she had gone to, Di Hughes, who owns Astro Coffee, and, this guy named Monty Luke, who's like a amazing techno artist that's based here. These people from Smith Shop was like a blacksmith shop that was in Pony Ride, and it was like 5 different people. And the idea was like for me on the photo side was to go in and like and document them in their space doing what they do. So it was like environmental portraits, a few like straight up portraits at the camera, but just like in the space, and then just like a lot of tight like on their hands doing their craft or doing whatever they do. So that was the first time I'd really done anything like that. And it like had fallen into my lap just as this like opportunity of like, hey, you like obviously know what you're doing on the portrait side, but like just give this a shot. And I just fell in love with like that process. I love just because I'm just a business nerd anyway. So like I loved hearing their like story that you just kind of talked about as you're shooting. But the aspect of like going into their space, doing what they like truly love and documenting, it was super cool. And that was like literally that project was the trajectory to like slowly moving out of weddings and into commercial work, because I took that same concept and basically turned it into a personal project after that, where I was just reaching out to other people I knew in the Detroit community and being like, hey, just let me come in like totally free. Let me come into your space, shoot photos of you doing your thing, and I'll give them to you and you guys can use them for whatever. So it's probably like 6 months or a year that I just like, you know, one time a month or something, I would just think of somebody to be like, hey, just let me come in and shoot. But then, you know, 6 months later, it's that start when you're putting that work out there, just like any personal project does, you start showing it and then people start coming to you and being like, hey, I want to pay you to do that. So that was like literally how my shift into commercial work happened, was a project getting dropped in my lap, me being like, oh, I actually like really love this, and then just doing it as a personal project. And then it eventually flipped into the paid side. And that was like, but it was like, it came natural because like as a wedding photographer, you're telling stories, or like that's at least what like my style was like kind of the storytelling aspect of it. So it came naturally to like shift that to the business, you know, mindset.
Yeah, that's what Kyle loves too. Kyle, he's our photographer, and he like even talked about that just last week. He said he realized what he loves taking photos of is people doing what they love.
Yeah. And it's and like to that point, and I'm sure like Kyle, you would feel the same way. Like I almost like can't get inspired if I don't have some kind of human element in a photo. Like I don't take like landscape photo, like even if we're traveling, like I don't take a whole lot of landscape photo. Like if there's not some kind of like human touch to it, like I'm not as, you know, stoked on it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that like, that is so true, is like, there has to be, you know, some kind of story there.
Yeah. He just purchased the website domain and created like his own little project called Humans Are Art. And the website is humansareart.com.
See, you got your domain.
yeah,
real cool, Kyle.
Yeah, he took photos of people doing what they love, and then he wrote about them.
Yeah,
so he like interviewed them, and then he was writing about
that
it.
That was like what I did on a. I had my wedding website, and then I had like a Tumblr for years. That was just like just my editorial work of like telling these stories, and like that, you know, eventually turned into actual work.
And I love the creative lesson / business lesson that you just shared in there as well. Is that you started off doing it because you deeply wanted to.
Yeah,
and you didn't need to make money from it. You didn't necessarily want to make money from it right away. You wanted to tell those stories and showcase those people. And then eventually is by doing that, then you got to develop a lot of skills and create a lot of relationships with people that eventually turned into something that you could earn money from.
Right. Yeah, that was, yeah, I am a huge proponent of the personal project, especially in the creative field. Obviously, like, you know, there's the point too of like, know your value, don't undercharge, but like, and that's kind of like, I would rather do something for free versus do something for too cheap. Like,
yes.
I would rather, you know, charge my worth on the projects that I know what I'm doing and do something for free that I either like value or care about or want to get into or whatever. But I mean, I've seen it like manifested many times in my life of like the personal project will turn into the real work at some point if you like care enough about it and there's like, you know, commercial applicability to it too.
Yeah, 100%. So then I'm curious on some advice that you might have for some newer creatives or photographers or entrepreneur people. Like, do you have any lessons that you've learned throughout your career of like, hey, here's a couple lessons that I learned the hard way that I can help you avoid?
Ooh, man, that's tough. Yeah, I mean the funny thing, like that's kind of the funny, like we touched on it a little bit earlier of like, yeah, I don't think I'm like that creative of a person or what, like I have some creativity in me, like but like even as a photographer, even spending, you know, 10 plus years as a wedding photographer, like my brain always erred more on the side of the business side of things. Like I was running a successful business that happened to be in the creative field, but it just as easily could have been anything else. It could have been, you know, a store or some kind of e-commerce line of something, but it was a business at the end of the day to me that I cared about and I enjoyed, you know, working on. But I mean, I've never done like a whole lot of, you know, teaching on the photography side of things. That's just not like where my head goes, but like the few times that like people have come to me asking for advice on that specifically, it's always just been the whole idea of just keep shooting. Like literally, mm-hmm. like doesn't matter what it is. Like when I started shooting when I was 14, 15, my mom's a nurse, my dad's an engineer. I don't come from like a creative family. Nobody in my family was an entrepreneur. Like this was all I was the new, I was paving the new trail. So I didn't grow up like as this kid that was like an artist or like cared about art or anything. I had started to go to school. I was shooting weddings full time by the time I was 17. So senior in high school, this was my job. But like the, I had started to go to school after that for graphic design because I was like, that's close enough. Like, I'm already doing photography. Like, maybe I just, and I ended up just quitting that and continuing to run my business. But that has been like the thing that I've always said is like, I just shot whatever I could to learn the ins and outs of my camera, to learn what I liked and what I didn't like, to learn. And then like, same thing when I started having clients that were people and I wasn't just like shooting pictures of my dog or flowers or whatever, like back when I was starting, but like same thing went where it was like, just shoot as much as humanly possible. Because that's when I learned, when I was started working with, you know, when I'm a junior or senior in high school and I'm working with high school seniors at that point who are my peers, like I'm learning how to interact with people. I'm learning what, you know, what to say and how to be professional and how to like put people at ease in your emails and how to answer promptly. And like, I've always talked about with like wedding photographers specifically, there's obviously like there's a spectrum. You've got people that are all the way on the left that are just like the creative artsy people that like can't answer an email for the life of them, like are pretty terrible at running their business, probably aren't making very much money, even though they're like, you know, working a ton and shooting a bunch of weddings. But like, their images are incredible because they're like super creative and they've got their processes down and all of that stuff. And then there's, you know, the right side that's more of like the old school photographers that everything is following the same process. Nothing is unique. Everything is just like, well, that's how I've been doing it for 40 years and it's worked. So like I kind of found myself in the middle where it's like I'm telling stories. I'm getting to like kind of be on this documentary kind of side of style of things, but I was running it as a business. Like that's what it was to me, was like customer service was huge to me. Answering emails was huge to me. Like being consistent in posting on social media and sharing these stories. And that was kind of like, that was what I think set me apart the most, was like that I cared about my photography business and not just as a like art form, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I run into that same thing with other creatives too, of like, that's where like the success lies. If you can toe that line of like, yes, like be creative, have amazing imagery, but like actually be like a decent person to work with and like be professional and like follow up on things and sign contracts. Like I even have friends that are like in the music industry that like, my good buddy Jason, for example, like I always tout him an example of doing this really well is like, he's a musician and his like career's really taking off and stuff, but he's like, he's actually really good at running the business side of his band. Like he knows how to, he's not just the guy that's like flying by the seat of his pants and hoping this works out and hope I play enough shows for somebody to see me. Like he's grinding it out behind the scenes to like get his music in front of the people that it needs to be in front of and get placed on TV shows and like all of that stuff. And that can be applied anywhere, but like you can't just be in a creative field and just expect it to work just based off of your style or artistry alone. Like if you want it to be a business, then it you need to actually run it as a business also.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful you said that. Yeah. I think that's a really good message. I'm happy you said that, because I do meet a lot of people and like they are incredible people, but they're just so afraid to charge. And you know, they do awesome, amazing, incredible things, but they're just like, one day. And I'm like, no, one day is today. Like,
well, that would be the same. Like I would say that to people, is like, I am not the most talented photographer in this state, in this city, in this, but like I, you know, was doing very well because I was running it as a business and like, and still having fun and still being creative and still, you know, serving my clients well with the images I was producing. But like, first and foremost, it was my business. It was my livelihood. And like, I was in this unique position where my wife and I have been together since we were 15. So like she's been with me through this entire, you know, trajectory and process and growth, which has been amazing because it's been like, I never had that scary jumping off point where you're like, you know, this 30-year-old guy that's worked in corporate America and now he's like quitting his job to go run his business and like hope it works out. Like, thankfully, like she was just always here and like, this has always been what we've done. And so like, it's never been a weird thing that I'm self-employed. It's never been a weird thing that like, we're trying to, you know, make this work. It never really feels scary because it's all we've ever done. But to that point, like it's just been cool to like, you know, that this has, it's become a thing. And that, like, I guess my ultimate point of what I was trying to say was, like, I had that, like, fire under my butt kind of the whole time of, like, we kind of did a lot of our life pretty early. We got married at 19 and 20. We had our first kid 2 years later. Now I'm 29. But, like, I always kind of had that pressure a little bit too of, like, this isn't just, like, you know, fun photo money that we're making on the side. Like, my wife is staying home with our kids, or, like, this is the life choices we made. Like, this has to be a real thing.
Like, did you just say you're 29?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought for sure, like, all the different businesses and stuff, you'd be 40.
No,
but you didn't look 40. So I was really confused.
No, just been, you know, not sleeping for just a long time.
That's been grinding for a long time. Yeah.
Wow. That is so cool.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride, but it's been a lot of fun.
And you shared, like, a key lesson in there is, like, your wife and you kept each other accountable, as it sounds like.
Yeah.
And there was no choice. It's like, hey, this is what I want to be doing.
Yeah. This is what we're doing. This is, you know, we were, like, everything has always passed through the lens of, like, what serves our family the most well. Like, what, you know, that has always been, like, the lens that every decision has passed through. And, you know, there's obviously, like, you know, there's still trials and tribulations that come with being a business owner, and with her not being a business owner and not understanding, you know, even we've been doing this for 12 years and there's still times where she doesn't get, you know, how my brain works as somebody that, like, or doesn't get the fact that, like, when you're self-employed, like, there's never not something you could be doing. Like,
<Yeah.
laughs> you know, like, there's never a time where I'm like, well, I hit the task list, we're good to go. Like, we can just chill. Like, yes, I could, like, you can choose to take time and forget that stuff exists, but, like, there's never not something you could be doing. And so, like, and that's still something, like, we battle with this to this day, even with her, like, being with me, you know, all this time. But, like, we've found so much more, you know, mutual understanding as time has gone on. And, like, I've understood how to, you know, shut things down when we need to. And but I mean, it's also, like, it's been, you know, the biggest blessing to, like, be us, have the super flexible career that, like, you know, mentioned, had that house in Traverse City for a while, and we would just, like, go up there for most of the winter. And, like, we had this just awesome, really cool setup that, like, we were, you know, supporting each other, and she was staying home with the kids. So, like, that gave us flexibility that we weren't, like, needing to have her take off time for a job to go do something or whatever. So, yeah, it's been a cool thing that, like, it's not like she joined this journey halfway through. Like, it's not like we started dating in my, you know, mid 20s or something, and she's just having to, like, hitch along for the ride and start understanding. It's like, this has literally been all we've ever done together in our teen and adult life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you have that flexibility to be with your kids and with your wife, and while also balancing, you know, work. And focusing on that too. I know one thing I was grateful for when I was younger is, like, my dad was a business owner as well. And I, like, out of the few memories that I have from my childhood is I remember getting to go to lunch with him in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And if he was, like, working at a corporate 9-to-5 job, that wouldn't really be able to, it wouldn't work.
Yeah. That just, like, to my point, like, my dad being an engineer, like, that, you know, something like that hardly ever happened unless we, like, met him at his office and, like, went, you know, out somewhere. So that's been, like, a really cool thing. And, like, my house is literally, like, half a mile from here. So, like, it's often that, like, my wife is swinging through and the kids are just, like, plowing through here in the middle of a work day and ruining everybody's productivity. And, but it's super cool. And it's like, that was such a big part of, like, buying this building too, is, like, just being nearby, being, investing in the neighborhood that we already, like, live in and love. It's been a really cool, like, different way for us to, like, pave our life than anything we knew at all. You know, mm-hmm. Grew up in South Lyon, she grew up in Plymouth, like, true suburbs to end all suburbs. And we're just kind of, you know, trying to pave a little bit different of a way for our kids and just for our life overall.
I want to talk a little bit about Detroit.
Yeah.
So you up and moved your family to Detroit, and now you're here. And I want to talk about, like, your entire vision for this space and this town. And, you know, today's the youngest you'll ever be. So who do you want to be when you're older?
Oh, man, I've never heard that. That's like a fun sentiment and also kind of depressing at the same time. But no, it's like, I moved my family here twice. We moved here for the first time in 2013. And it was a terrible experience. Like we, like not only like 2013 Detroit and 2021 Detroit are vastly different cities. Like, and so I had been, Mammoth Reach, we had run from the city, like from 2012 on, probably. We had an office on the riverfront here. And you know, I was just driving here every day. We were living in Canton at the time. And it was like, I had this whole like second set of friends here, and it was like the end of the workday would happen, and I was like, you know, jetting an hour back out, and I felt like I was like living, you know, two separate lives. So I was like, you know, we started investigating like what would it look like if we moved there? That might be fun. Like, you know, I could be home in 5 minutes instead of an hour or whatever. And so she finally agreed. She had like, she didn't have a whole lot of semblance of the city. She didn't know anybody here. Like I had all these friends here, so I felt comfortable. But like, so we found an apartment on the riverfront, and it was like in a high rise and, super cool, like development, but it was like, it was a rental like condo, like on the fifth floor facing the city skyline, like just nothing but skyline views and like 2013 prices. So like, or 2012 prices, whatever it was. It was like in a gated complex that like had a whole bunch of land and like willow trees and pools. And like, it was super sweet for like $1,200 a month or something, like crazy. But we found out like, so she was like, all right, well, we'll do it. Like fingers crossed. And like 2 weeks before we moved, she found out she was pregnant with our first. And so like moved to a brand new city without, you know, any, without her knowing anybody, number one, but also like pregnant, and like she had a super terrible pregnancy the first time, like sick for 27 weeks, like wow, just terrible. And then it was like also winter. We moved in November, and like winter in the city is not like a pretty time here. Like it's just slush and like nastiness, and like it's gray all the time, and like it's just not like a great time to
yeah
to let the city shine for somebody that was already apprehensive to begin with. So like that just like set the tone, and then like compound that with like we live in a gated complex, like in a high rise that like has no community whatsoever. Like you're walking in, you're parking your car, you're walking inside, you're getting on an elevator, and you're closing your door behind you, and you never see anybody in that. Like, so like you're not even making those like little in between connections with yeah somebody in the hallway or somebody, your next door neighbor or whatever. It's just like there's four units on a floor and like you never saw anybody else. So that just like set the tone, and then like pair that with like there just wasn't a whole lot going on here then. Like yeah, it was, you know, restaurants were kind of starting to open. Some cool stuff was happening. Like obviously there was like a big art scene, but like that wasn't necessarily like our scene. So like it was just a weird, it was a weird time. And so like our lease, you know, came and went after a year, and she was like, nah, I'm good. Like we can, let's go ahead and get out of here. And like, I was like genuinely heartbroken at the time. Cause I felt like I had finally like married my two lives together. Like I was obsessed with the city. I had so many friends here. I loved working here. I loved like doing what I was doing. And I was like, oh, wow, I finally like got here. I finally moved here. So we ended up moving out to South Lyon, where I grew up for 3 years. My parents had like bought a investment property like right downtown. My dad had like spent 4 years renovating. It was like the nicest little like ranch, you know, 50s ranch. And like the house was amazing. And it was like for us as a family, it was like, it was a good for like her specifically. It was like a good just like healing, you know, time to like have this place that she felt super safe. And my parents were, you know, like down the road, and we got to see them a lot and all of that stuff. But like, I was like, oh man, I'd like touched that, like,
you're like so close.
Like it just felt like home here. And like, I just, you know, I really, and, but like when we moved away, I was like, I genuinely believed we would never be back. Like I was like, I'm just going to be commuting here like every day for the rest of my life. And like, like living these two separate lives again. Like it just felt like so disjointed. And so she, so yeah, we lived there for 3 years, and then, you know, the city changed, and like we started like going on date nights more, and she kind of saw like more of what I saw in the city as time went on. And she actually, like, she was the one that restarted the, cause I was like, I'm not going to broach that conversation again of being like, hey, what do you think? Give it another go. But she actually, like, she started the conversation where she was like, what if we, you know, what if we tried it again? And we looked, like, we spent probably 6 months looking for a place here. This was 2017. And she, we couldn't find anywhere that was like, you know, all you can get like on a rental is like two bedrooms, and we had two kids, and we had two dogs, or one dog at the time or whatever. And like, we couldn't find anywhere. And we ended up finding this condo in West Village that was like a new construction. That was just like perfect, setup for us. Like a bunch of random pieces fell into place and like projects came together that like allowed us to afford it when we couldn't have before. It was just like this weird, like, you know, amazing timing thing. And like within a month or two of us moving here, she was like, I'm going to live here forever. Like I love it. She loves it so much. And then we eventually, you know, went through the process of buying and renovating a house that had been abandoned for 10 years and, did that whole process. And, yeah, we're likely never leaving is the game plan, but yeah, love it here. Have no interest in like building my business anywhere else. Was, you know, looking for, we were, Doug and I were kind of, in the early stages of Handcar, we're renting desks from a friend in Corktown. We were kind of looking for different office space, and we had signed like in January or February had signed on another office space to rent. And then when COVID hit, we were like, I just like bailed on all of it. I'm like, we're working from home. Like we're not, you know, doing anything. And then this building, when things kind of like, when we were like, okay, cool. Like we're bouncing back, like all of our work only got, you know, more busy. And so I had approached the developer that we were working with on that, who owned this building. And I was like, hey, like, what's the deal with the building over there? Like, I know the other business went out of business and it's just kind of sitting empty. I was like, would you ever rent that one? Cause I was like, that would be even better set up for us. So it's like ground level, has its own parking lot. We're moving gear in and out. Like it's great. It's like 2 minutes from my house. He was like, yeah, actually he's like, but I'm kind of like interested in consolidating what I'm doing over to this other part of town. Would you be interested in buying the building? It was again like this weird serendipitous timing of like our house in Traverse was selling at the exact same time that he's like presenting me with this opportunity. And I'm like, well, I guess we're buying a little garage in Detroit. So, yeah, here we are. But, the funny thing is now we're like, you know, figured we'd be here a long time, but now we're kind of getting to the point of probably outgrowing it within the next year or so.
I wondered.
Yeah. I mean like the room we're in now is like 700 square feet. So with, you know, we can do things to, we've done things to like, you know, conserve space a little bit. And we've got a couple desks that are in the closet over there. And we can, if things get in a pinch, we can kind of move people to like the outside edges and save some room. But yeah, probably if with the amount of like studio shooting that we do and stuff, like it's just, it's gonna get a little tight in here pretty soon.
And you have a pretty big plant.
Yeah.
I love your plant. What's the story with that? The big one behind you. The giant plant. I love it.
Yes. That came with the building. That was part of part of the purchase. It had not been watered in probably 4 months when we bought the building. Like it was just dried to the bone, but there was like there was probably like 5 leaves on it at the time. And we cut it back to like 2 that seemed the most viable. And then we just have kept water in it. That's like, we've literally done nothing else, but it just keeps like sprouting like mad.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to do if it like keeps going.
I thought you got it from Bloomscape. I was going to ask how much.
No, they don't sell them quite that big.
No, yeah,
that's huge.
That would most be of the other plants so in here money. Are from,
shout out Bloomscape. yeah, they were a client of ours for a long time. And we just were flush with plants from working with them because they would ship them to us like the same way they ship them to clients because their greenhouse is on the west side of the state. So they would like literally send us the plants via UPS. We would take them out and then photograph them like on Studio White for their website. But then we just got to keep them. So like, but it was getting to the point like towards the end of our time, they ended up starting to work with a photographer out on the west side of the state to make more sense. But towards the end of our time working with them, it was getting to the point of we were like, we have no one else to give these plants to. Like we're like, our families all have like 4 or 5 in their house. Like Doug's house is overrun with them. And like the studio's filled with them. And we were reaching max plant capacity, but you know, I'll always take the free swag. If somebody's letting me keep the stuff from the photo shoot, I'm in.
Like gluten-free bars?
Yeah. Yeah. We're flush with that too. You can visit our pantry after the show.
Perfect.
No, yeah. Thank you. I've just been so excited to hear your story.
Yeah.
I hear so much about you and, you know, everything you do, even working with Bloomscape, like I'm obsessed with plants. So I'm like, man, you guys do so much fun stuff around Detroit.
Just come in and breathe this high quality oxygen we got pumping in here. Yeah. From the.
But I mean, another thing too is like, I'd never met anyone like with a passion for Detroit like Bill. And then, you know, here you are, you're kind of just living that out too. I just, I love like the patriotism that goes towards the city.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. It's like I tell people like the sticking it out, like I have been consistently working in the city since 2010. Like, you know, whether it was shooting or whether it was running previous business or whatever, like I have been pretty much, even those 3 years that I wasn't living here, I was based here for my business. And like, I wholeheartedly believe that that was like the best business decision I've ever made, was to like align myself here. And not only just for like the name on the door of like, you know, base, like that was not at all the reason I was doing it, but like there is a cachet that comes with working from here and living from here. And, you know, there was a time when we had our house in Traverse that we were considering moving up there and like, you know, still having like switching our commute from, instead of living here and going up there sometimes, to living there and coming down here mm-hmm. sometimes. But like, that was a big part of the reason not to, is like Detroiters support Detroiters like nowhere else in the world, number one. But like, that was going to be a big thing, was like, as soon as I don't live here and I'm just like pretending like my business is based here and, you know, keep it, like people will notice, and like mm-hmm. the work will stop flowing, you know, as much as it was in that way. So like aligning myself here and being a part of it, and then like even, you know, hyper localizing it even more to now like living and working in the same neighborhood is so important to me. And like my 6-year-old son's school is like a block north of here, and like, so all of our life is really just like in this neighborhood that we love. And like, you know, we're looking forward to things being more open and able to invite people in, because like we have big dreams for this space too, to like actually invite the neighborhood in here and like teach things and host workshops for like kids in the neighborhood and like put a camera in their hand and that kind of stuff. And like, those are all dreams that we haven't really been able to realize yet. You know, haven't even been able to have like an opening party for the building we've been in for almost a year, but those days will come.
Yeah. That was what I was going to ask you next, was who do you want to be when you're older? What do you see for yourself in this place?
I don't know. I am just like having fun with the journey. I'm not like, you know, motivated by, you know, a ridiculous amount of money or anything like that. Like I'm just like having fun with the process. And just want to like, this has been like the culmination of everything I've been trying to do, and like building something bigger than myself. Like this has been the best part, is like getting to do something with a team, and that, you know, carries on without me. And like, it's been, that's so like, whether it's this or whether it's something else, if I can, you know, just be building something with other people and supporting my family and like getting to do fun things with my family and maybe, you know, expanding in the future into my wife's business and getting that blown up more, than like, that's all I can ask for.
That's such a great answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I practiced it in the mirror this morning. Yeah. I could sense it coming.
You're like, if they ask me this, do I say?
That one specific question, I'm going to have that answer worked out.
That's good foresight.
Yeah.
Well, my last question is like, what's one thing that you're grateful for?
Ooh, that is a good question. I mean, it's,
if you have like 15 things that you're grateful for, you're welcome to all those things.
Like it's a little bit the same. Like I am eternally grateful for my family and my wife, and like even, you know, my family, meaning my parents and like how they, you know, raised me. And, but I'm thankful for the support that they provided, and like the fire it's put in me to like chase after something, and the ability to chase after something that isn't the normal route that somebody would typically take with a job. Like I'm thankful for that, like fire in me to chase after my own job and my own path. I'm thankful to be able to like work and talk to people and like reach solutions. And, it's just like, it's that part is fun for me. Like it's super fun to just like be here and do these things. Like, yeah. And it all kind of comes back to that. And then it all comes back to just the ability to support my family and have them along for the ride.
I love it.
I love it too.
What are you grateful for, Bill?
I am grateful for lots of things. I'm grateful for having the opportunity to get to pursue the things that I think that I might enjoy doing, and to pursue work that kind of satisfies my soul.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking at, well, like if the best case scenario for me is, how is it that I get to work with people who I love working with? How is it that I get to work with them on projects that we love working on? And like, how do we make great money doing it?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to sacrifice any of those things. And so for me, getting all of those things is a winning combination. And I feel like I get to do all of that, and I'm extremely grateful for it.
That's killer.
How about you, Brianna?
I'm just 100% grateful for the people in my life. It's the people for me. It's always the people. Like, it's my family. It's, you know, my team. It's my friends. It's the people I get to meet. And then the people who we get to, you know, our clients who really just, they become friends.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm grateful for that. The deep relationships and connections.
Yeah. Jesse, thank you so much.
Thank you guys. This is fun.
Yeah, it has been fun. I really respect you from afar and now from close up.
Yeah.
And I
from
like
6
you,
feet
like
apart.
You, yes. And, but you're an inspiration to so many different people. And whether you realize it or not, is I know like myself and Kyle and so many other people know who you are and have watched your journey. And just by the matter of you kind of obeying that fire in your soul, that voice saying, do the thing, try the thing, just go for it. Is you're leading by example without it even having to say anything. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Yeah. That means a ton.